Draw a picture right now. All right, you done? That sucks, right? I spent 2 hours on the face, I couldn't get the hands right, and when I compared my art to this other artist I found online who's younger than me, it makes me want to curb stomp this monstrosity so no one ever has to look at it again. Okay, now, think of a joke. Not one you've already heard before. I want you to think up a brand new, never been done before joke. Okay. You know how cats are, like, lazy? Maybe we could do a joke about a lazy cat and his owner is like, stop being so lazy. That sucked too! Now imagine doing both of those things together and then putting that artwork up for the entire world to leave their unfiltered, anonymous opinions. And on top of that, you also make virtually no money off of it. Who in their right mind would put themselves through that kind of torture? Well, dear viewer, I would like you all to meet Zachary. Zachary is a webcomic artist. He makes webcomics just so when you're scrolling through your timeline while taking your morning poo, you get a little chuckle to yourself. And then you keep on scrolling, forgetting about his existence entirely in mere seconds. I have a soft spot for funny webcomics. Not the super serious superhero ones or the Japanese ones. Wait, why is this part all pixely? Webcomics can be shared on any platform. In fact, a lot of webcomics get reposted without the artist's consent and with their names removed. Which is kind of weird that someone went through the effort of removing a watermark when they could have just, you know, not done anything and left it. I hope you all realize that behind every comic is an artist who just wanted to make you laugh and doodle something that day. I started reading webcomics at a very young age. Back then, we just called them comics. They were really the only books that I liked to read, and the only place you could read the hottest new comics was in the newspaper. Oh, sorry, I should clarify. A newspaper is a stack of gray paper that would be delivered to your house by a child riding a bike, and they would print 19 pages of useless information and have one page dedicated to the funnies. This is where the classics were born. You know the ones. The Calvin and Hobbes. The Garfields. The Far Sides. Some of these comics have made me laugh harder than any meme ever has. I just want to say that Calvin and Hobbes was an extremely creative comic. It was a comic about a rambunctious boy that had a giant predatory animal best friend. I mean, where else have you seen that before? By the way, if you ever see those Calvin peeing bumper stickers, those are unlicensed knockoffs and really go against everything Calvin and his creator, Bill Watterson, stood for. In fact, all Calvin and Hobbes merchandise is unlicensed because Bill Watterson never made merchandise. But I mean, aren't these crochet Hobbes dolls the coolest? So there was only enough space in the paper for about 20 comics. And last time I counted, there were way more than 20 comic creators. So if you wanted to get your silly little comic in the newspaper, you had some fierce competition. But now, anyone with a computer and enough dedication can create comics that get shared by millions of people. You don't even need a fancy drawing tablet or expensive painting software, or even art skills in general. Webcomics and the internet and memes have been intertwined for decades. Many of your favorite meme formats are just edited webcomics. Now, in most cases, if someone took an artist's work, defaced it, and then re-uploaded it without credit, that'd be a bad thing. But memes are different, I guess. The reason I'm bringing this up is because I want you all to know that these artists have made other comics that are just as funny, and you should support their work and buy their books, and if you're going to make a webcomic edit, please just keep in the watermark. It's literally more work to take it out, and you're being an asshole. Some of you original gangsters may remember that I also used to be a webcomic artist. I posted my first webcomic in 2012, which was over 10 years. 10 years?! It's been that long? What the fuck? I'll be honest, my webcomics took a little while to get some traction. Let me explain something. All the comics I would read in the newspaper had distinguished characters with personalities. A lot of times, the punchline of a newspaper comic would only be funny because we knew the characters and their mannerisms. Garfield hates Mondays, so instead of him hating Friday the 13th, he hates Monday the 13th. That's a good one, Garfield. So I try to make a webcomic like that with my own little universe. I'm gonna be a little vulnerable for a minute. Let's talk about my OCs I made when I was a 16-year-old boy. There were three main brothers. Jake, who was a self-insert character. One time I dressed up as him for Halloween. Justin, the book smart straight man. Straight man as in the character archetype, not the sexuality. Although if any of the brothers were gay, Justin would be the gay one. And Kevin, the laid-back older brother who did whatever he wanted because he's the oldest. Those three were the main boys. Jake, Justin, and Kevin. The three whitest names anyone's ever heard. Now, if you're an up-and-coming comedy webcomic artist, I would suggest not to do what I did. If you're just trying to make someone laugh, you don't need a whole cast of characters that have intricate relationships. Just tell your joke and leave. Or don't. It's your art. You can do whatever you want. Eventually, I wanted to rebrand myself. Instead of having distinguished, defined characters, I went with a very basic-looking character design that had absolutely no distinguishing features at all. And I settled on a design that looked like this. I mean, over time, I refined it. I originally posted my comics exclusively to Tumblr. It was just me and this other obscure webcomic about trolls. We were the two main ones, really. Now, if you're still an up-and-coming webcomic artist, then you should post your comics to every platform imaginable. I learned the importance of cross-platform promotion the not-so-easy way. One day, I got a Tumblr message from someone asking if they could post my comics to a small, unknown app called iFunny. And I said, sure. Then that guy would periodically send me messages like, dude, we are blowing up! Our comics keep getting featured! And I was like, our? Then I wake up to messages asking, hey, are you the one posting these to iFunny? And I said, no, but I gave the other guy permission to. You know he's impersonating you and starting beef with other artists, right? It turned out that iFunny was my most popular social media account, and I didn't even have access to it. I eventually got the account back, and now people tell me that they loved reading my comics on iFunny back in the day, which wasn't even part of the plan originally. Webcomics have really impacted me and this channel. Some of my earliest online friends were other webcomic artists who I don't keep in touch with as much as I should. My bad, guys, I'm sorry. My username is based off my webcomic, my character design was made for my webcomic, and even my cannonball profile picture is from a panel in my webcomic. I really hope this video makes you appreciate the webcomics that you see on your timeline. I know you see them, they're everywhere. If you come across a comic you like, I want you to try and find the original artist's socials and browse their other comics they've created. I guarantee you'll find some banger comics that just didn't get the same amount of attention as the other ones. And who knows, you might just make a difference in someone's art career. You know, making a whole video about webcomics has made me miss my first love. A lot of times when I think of a joke, I have to wait 2 months to tell it. And at that point, I don't even know if it's funny anymore. But a webcomic can have same-day joke delivery. So this is how I'm officially announcing that I'm making webcomics again. I'll be posting them on my website and maybe Twitter if I'm still verified. There's already 6 brand new comics. Feel free to make any meme edits of them. I don't care. Also, be sure to check out this amazing reversible toasty plush. It's honestly my favorite thing. And up until April 10th, we're running Merch Madness, where you can possibly score a free VidCon ticket and meet up with me. You don't even need to buy anything to enter, so check out the description for more information. I'm super excited to be making comics again. It's how I started out my internet journey. I'm going to try and post at least 1 comic a week, so be on the lookout for those. Thank you all for watching and sticking through this end card. Y'all are the real ones.
I hate you!
Oh! Well, next time, don't steal my Monopoly!
Ariana, give James your $200 you landed on his property.
No! He's in jail! I'm not gonna give money to a criminal! That's not how you...
Mommy, why is brother screaming?
Shut the f*** up, Sally! You don't get to talk after stealing my last railroad! I wish I was never born! Me too! You think I wanted this?
Hi, what you all just witnessed is the phenomenon known as Family Game Night. Family Game Night plays an important role in the household dynamic, as studies have shown that families who participate in activities together form closer bonds and stronger relationships with each other. So try setting aside some time to play board games with your family. And if they beat you, cut them out of your life forever. Okay, have fun, you guys.
I like board games. I guess any game that doesn't involve me getting up and moving around, I'm a huge fan of. Also, since I'm bad at everything and don't like playing games against someone who's better than me, I really love the games that don't require any type of skill, like the game Chutes and Ladders, which I just learned today has another name called Snakes and Ladders. And I'm going to call it that instead, because I'd rather draw snakes than
chutes.
In Snakes and Ladders, you have no free will. You're at the mercy of a single dice, and I love it. While I was looking up walkthroughs for Snakes and Ladders, I quickly learned that this game was made for preschoolers, which is probably why it's so simple. Or how about the game Sorry, which is the most unapologetic game I've ever played? There's some strategy in that game, but most of the time you're just getting revenge on the players who've wronged you. And the creators of Sorry knew this because the tagline of the game is Sorry, the game of sweet revenge. Which, if you think about it, is a pretty funny oxymoron. Aha! Take this! Sorry. I know how to play chess, but like most things, I'm not very good at it. Unless I'm playing against someone under the age of 4, I don't want to play that game. Because it shows everyone how bad I am at planning ahead. That's a game that's 100% strategy-based. It's like the IQ test of board games. Beating someone in chess will put you more ahead academically than anyone with a Harvard degree. And you'll get more babes. However, there is one exception, and that is, it's okay to lose at chess if you're playing against a computer, even if it's on easy mode. Computers are way better at planning ahead than anyone, because I don't know how, but a human made a computer that can beat the world's best chess player, but the creator of the computer can't beat the world's best chess player. So I guess that means it's game over. We tried our best, but we've peaked. Whenever you beat a computer in chess, it was going easy on you. Imagine if we made a computer that could beat the world's best Snakes and Ladders player. I would pay money to see a Snakes and Ladders championship. And everyone watching knows that the person playing is just some Joe Schmo that acts like the world's best Snakes and Ladders player, but they're all still excited. And there's real snakes that you get to slide down? That would be amazing! Sign me up. While we're on the topic of chess, I want to tell you about this cool sport I discovered called chess boxing. This is an actual competitive sport where two players play chess for 3 minutes, then box each other for 3 minutes. And they keep switching between chess and boxing until someone either gets a checkmate, they run out of time playing chess, or they KO the other player. I love this sport because it combines two polar opposite games, and it's something that anyone can play. Brains over brawn? Try saying that after I sucker punch you in the... Oh, that was a good move. I'm gonna punch you so hard in the balls for that. I know I just said I was bad at chess, but if there's any YouTubers who want to challenge me to a chess boxing match, I will gladly take you to the ring, and we can charge people $12 just to watch. And we can end it in a draw, you know, so that way you won't look bad in front of your fans. So Battleship, that's another board game, and it also got a big Hollywood movie based off of it. I haven't seen it, but I hope there's a scene where the captain of the ship goes, "Men, fire at... D6? And then there's an explosion in the distance, and then Rihanna, who is actually in that movie, says, "Sir, the alien sent a message. It says, miss." And the captain goes, Someone write that down so we don't forget. And then there'd be an explosion at the back of their ship, and alarms start going off, and everyone on board starts freaking out except for the captain, and he goes, "Rihanna, send the aliens a message. Tell them, hit." Also, ask them if they think the situation would make a good board game. And if that scene is not in the movie, I hate it. Did anyone else collect a bunch of Pokemon cards, but never knew how to play the game? I don't think I met a single person who actually knew how to play the card game. Which was weird, because in my school, the card game was just as popular as the video games. Kids would always show off their collection of cards and binders, and everyone always wanted the highly coveted shiny Charizard card. You know which one I'm talking about. You know which one I'm talking about. You know which one I'm talking about! Unlike Yu-Gi-Oh!, which had dedicated episodes explaining why these 5 pieces of cardboard were expensive, the shiny Charizard was rare, not because it was good in the game, but because everyone agreed that it looked cool. But then when you asked someone, "Hey, do you want to play a game?" they would say, "Okay, I summon my Charizard in attack mode." Does anyone even know how to play the Pokemon card game? I bet none of these guys even know what they're doing. How'd this guy win? He didn't even call Uno. I can't be too hard on the Pokemon cards, because the card game I like is probably way more complicated than Pokemon. I don't know for sure, because, like I said, I don't know how to play the Pokemon card game, but my favorite card game is Neopets. I'm just kidding, that was a joke. Kind of. I did actually own a lot of Neopet cards. I don't remember exactly how to play. I do remember you have to get 21 points to win, which got me into playing blackjack. But it's okay that I don't remember how to play, because no one else is playing this game. I wanted to find some footage of a Neopet TGC championship, only to come to the disappointing realization that no Neopet championship exists, which is sad. So, if there's any YouTubers watching who want to fight my Scorchio, square up. Okay, but for real, the card game I like the most is Magic the Gathering. And fun little factoid, all three card games I've mentioned were created by the same company, Wizards of the Coast. Hey, is that a Monopoly reference? I've been playing Magic since 2007, and back then the game was a lot more simple. Look at some of these more recent cards. First, see how many words are on them? And if we flip them over, they merge into an even bigger card. What? If you showed these cards to my 11-year-old self, I would have lost my marbles. My favorite thing about Magic is when Dick Garfield, was first creating the game in 1993, he didn't really have an accurate way of testing the cards to make sure they're all fair and balanced, and he ended up creating some of the most overpowered cards in Magic. And players today refer to these cards as the Power 9, because there were 9 really good ones, which is why every single one of them is banned. Now, don't get me wrong, the Power 9 are good cards, but none of them are like, you win the game good. Take this one for example, Ancestral Recall. All it says is, draw 3 cards, or force opponent to draw 3 cards. Which is stupid that they added that last part. Why would you ever give your opponent 3 more cards to beat you with? Now, I know what you're thinking. Wait, a slightly better Pot of Greed, which is a card that allows me to draw 2 new cards from my deck and place them into my hand, is one of the top 9 most powerful Magic cards? Yeah, Pot of Greed is banned too. Games play such an important role in childhood, and here's what they all teach us. In Magic, if you're really good at what you do, no one will invite you to their tournament. Monopoly, white-collar crime is okay. Battleship, just guess and check. Snakes and ladders, if you see a ladder, climb it immediately. And no one cares about Neopets. Now, if you excuse me, I have to show this prison guard my coupon I have that lets me get out of jail anytime I like. Hello? Okay. It's for you, James.
Hey, James. This is James from the future.
Just wanted to give you a call and let you know that
puberty can be tough, but you can get through it.
So, I just wanted to let you know that everything's gonna be okay and
I love you.
You got the wrong number.
I grew up in a generation where smartphones were a new thing and everyone in my class had one, except for me. My parents never got me one because they didn't want me to access the internet on a device that could fit in my pocket because they were super strict and didn't want me looking at internet stuff, which backfired horribly. So they never gave me a smartphone. In fact, I didn't even get my first cell phone until I was 16 years old. Now, as an adult who uses a cell phone every day, I don't know how I survived for 16 years without one. I think when I was younger, if I was ever in a situation where I needed to call my parents, I would just ask the nearest person if I could borrow their phone. Now, if there's any parents watching this who haven't given their children a cell phone yet, take it from a guy on the internet with no children. You should get them one. It doesn't have to be a smart one, you can just give them your standard drug dealer phone, but you should at least give them a cell phone in case there's an emergency and they need to call you or the police. The only downside I can think of giving your child a phone is they'll end up spending too much time on it, so you should just turn off their service from time to time, I don't know. When I turned 16 and finished up my sophomore year of high school, I got my very first cell phone. An LG Cosmos 2.
I didn't grow up in the 90s. Everyone else had iPhones, but I was the only one with a phone that had a keyboard on it.
And with that cell phone, I've had a couple of incidences where sometimes a random person would call me, thinking I was someone else, and then wouldn't admit they're wrong. And that's how you segue into the theme of this month's video. This first story happened when I was working at Subway.
That's right, another Subway story! Hashtag Subway 4, it wasn't good enough to be in the other 3.
So, it was 5 minutes until closing, and we get a phone call on the Subway phone. I pick it up and say,
Thank you for calling Subway, how may I help you?
I was supposed to say, this is James, how may I help you? But I wasn't about to tell this random stranger my name.
Idiot.
Anyway, the other person on the line said, hey, what time do you guys close? In 5 minutes? Is it all right if I show up late? I just need gas. And being the good employee that I was totally willing to make this guy's sandwich over the phone, let him pick it up after we closed, and then I wouldn't ring him up and just pocket the money. I'm just kidding. I wouldn't do that. That's a crime. Please don't sue me. So I said, yeah, I can do that. What kind of sandwich do you want? And he said, I just need gas. Oh, don't worry, sir. This sandwich will give you plenty of gas. I mean, do you want chips or something? No, he said. I just need gas. I was a little confused. Okay, yes. So you'll get gas, then are you going to stop by and pick up a sandwich? And he said, I don't want a sandwich. And then it hit me. Even though the first thing I ever said to this guy was, thank you for calling Subway, I think he thought he was talking to a gas station. So I said, sir, this is a Subway?
Oh.
And I never got the chance to tell him that gas pumps don't close. This next story happened when I was at home and I got a call from a number I didn't recognize. Now, I've had friends tell me that they don't answer the phone to any number they don't recognize, but my anxiety won't let me do that. What if it's your bank calling saying your account got hacked? What if it's your grandma? Because why would you have her saved in your phone? Or what if it's your Nigerian uncle who wants to give you his collection of gold bars and needs your information for a wire transfer? You just never know, so I always pick up the phone. So I answered it, and it was this woman asking for a Lawrence. And I said, oh, I'm not... That's... You have the wrong number. And she goes, isn't this 416-295? That's obviously not a real number, so don't try calling it. And I said, no, this is 416-293, because that's my phone number. Again, that's not actually a valid phone number, so please don't call it. And she goes, 3? I don't think I pressed 3. And I don't know what to say to this woman, because my number is 416-293. It's really not. But she doesn't think she pushed 3. So I don't know how she's talking to me right now. Unless she did. So I said, well, obviously, you did. And then I made a comic about the whole situation because I thought the internet would think it was funny. This next story happened not too long ago. I got a call from a number I didn't recognize at 9:30 in the morning. And I was lying in my bed, asleep. And most people would agree that you're supposed to be awake and productive at 9:30. And I didn't want whoever this stranger was thinking I'm lazy, so I had to answer the phone with my best, I've been awake for several hours voice. Hello?
You're going to have to come quickly. Timmy fell down the well, Vance.
What?
I said you're going to have to come quickly because Timmy fell down.
I could tell it was a woman on the phone, but it was either her accent or the phone being buggy or I just had woken up, but I could not understand anything she was saying. But I could make out one word, which was Vance. So, I did not have a lot to go off of. I said,
I think you have the wrong number. Okay, goodbye.
No, no, hang up the phone. You gotta come quickly, because Timmy fell out.
Well, I should probably get the day started, I thought as I went back to sleep. But then immediately I got a call from the same number, and I thought, okay, maybe if this person is calling again, even after I explicitly told her she had the wrong number, maybe it's not a wrong number after all, maybe there's something else going on, maybe it's an emergency, so maybe, talk to me.
Hold it, hold it, hold it, hold it, hold it, Vance.
Okay. I can't understand anything you're saying. So then this woman must have handed the phone to her friend because a different voice started talking and I could actually understand her and I'll never forget what she said, which was,
Vance, no one thinks
that you're funny.
And even though I'm not Vance, that kinda hurt. So I stated the obvious, which was, yes, I am. And also I'm not Vance. And she said,
no, Lance.
So this whole time, these two have been looking for a Lance. So I told this woman, I'm not Lance either. And she said,
well, this is the number they gave me.
Okay, if she had said it like, oh, I'm sorry, this is the number they gave me, I didn't mean to call you, stranger. Also, I do think you're funny and enjoy your videos, then that would have been totally fine. She's just shifting the blame to someone else. But instead, she sounded so condescending, like I was wasting her time. Well, this is the number they gave me, and they can't be wrong, so you must be the real Lance. So I said, well, they must have given it to you wrong. Look, I'm too tired to be polite. But then, she hung up on me. Like, this woman just basically called a random person, said, you're not funny, and then hung up. So I decided to call her back and said, hey, I just found the real Lance. He's the funniest guy I ever met, and he told me he doesn't give his phone number out to rude pieces of shit. I'm just kidding on that last part. I thought about doing it, but then I went back to sleep. I didn't do it. And then someone on the internet found my phone number, and I changed it. And whoever has my old number is probably getting a lot of calls from strangers and people I went to high school with. Sorry about that.
The older I get, the more I've realized how much time I have to set aside just to clean. I'll ask a friend, what'd you get up to last weekend? And they'll think for a bit and then say, I just cleaned. Crap, I gotta do that too. I've seen people, therapists, and the elderly all talk about how everyone's too gosh darn connected to their cell phones. How we don't allow ourselves a single moment to be present or alone with our thoughts. But when it comes to cleaning, I think you should fill that void up with as much noise as possible. Cleaning is such a boring and monotonous task that even people in the 1700s would pass the time by singing to themselves. And while these pilgrims didn't have endless podcasts to listen to, you have YouTube videos. Like this one. So I want this video to serve as the noise you listen to while you get up and clean something. Hopefully hearing a YouTuber talk about cleaning for the next 10 minutes will motivate you to start chipping away at that mess you've been putting off for months. I'm not asking you to drop everything and do a 3-hour deep clean of your closet, but half-assing something is still better than no-assing something. And I think you'd be surprised with how nice you can make a space look in only 10 minutes. I want to give the caveat that I'm not a clean freak. I've lived in a college dorm with a bunch of other guys. My sink is most likely full of dishes as you're watching this. And if anyone needs to do a 3-hour deep clean of their closet, it's me. And I also know how hard it can be to look at a room that's in such a bleak and disarray state that you get so overwhelmed by the mess that you don't even know where to start cleaning. So you never do, which perpetuates this never-ending cycle that makes your entire space and mental health messier. Luckily, I have a solution. If you don't even know where to begin dealing with the mess, the first step to cleaning any room is taking out the trash. That's it. That's all you have to do. All those empty bottles and boxes, get them out of there. Whenever I clean, I like to play this fun little game that I know you've never played before because it's a game I invented. It's called... Is that where that goes? To play this game, all you have to do is point at an object and go... Is that where that goes? And if that object is where it goes, then you're good. You don't have to do anything. But if that object isn't where it goes, then you put it where it goes. And you beat the game once everything that's going to or needed to go goes where it goes. So while you're grabbing trash bags and flattening out boxes, let me explain why I found cleaning to be so important in my adult life. I really have to thank my parents for distilling, I wouldn't call it a love for cleaning, but rather a tolerance for it. Growing up, my parents would print out physical job charts for the week, and every day us kids did all of our chores, we would earn $1. However, any single chore we didn't do, we would lose $1. Meaning, it was possible for us to come out of a week of doing chores in the red. My parents were earning money and teaching us about capitalism because my bed wasn't made. Still owe them $35. We were able to earn some money back doing Saturday chores. This is when we did a deeper clean like vacuuming or mopping. But Saturday chores didn't even hold a candle to the absolute worst chores we had to do, which were the dreaded... Company is coming over chores. For some reason, whenever company was on their merry way, it was vital that rooms said company would never even enter in the first place were spotless. This one time, I think my mom was hosting like book club or something, I finished mopping my bathroom, which was not a bathroom that anyone in book club would be using, by the way. And my mom did her usual room cleanliness inspection and said, I think you should wipe that bucket down, too. She was making us clean the cleaning instruments.
Do you want me to vacuum the vacuum next?
However, if it wasn't for all those chores my parents forced me to do, I feel like cleaning would have become something I dreaded doing, instead of something I can actually wind down the day with. I look forward to folding laundry and putting something on the TV because I feel like I did something productive while watching cartoons. And since I don't live with mom anymore, I don't have to clean my bucket, which now doubles as a toilet. Cleaning has become such an integral part of my life that cleaning other people's spaces is how I show my affection. I'm about to put one of my best friends on complete blast here, but I think he'll be okay with it because he constantly asks me to put him in videos. I'm doing a video that's a puppet show with two bricks.
Can I voice one of the bricks?
Okay. Yeah! I recently visited one of my close friends, Infamous Swoosh, at his place in upstate New York. He's 24, living on his own for the first time with three other dudes, and the second I stepped into his house, I went, oh, this is a guy's house. I don't think a woman's been in here in, like, ever. What really sealed it for me was the bathroom not having a trash can, but rather a loose trash bag leaning up against a wall. And it was full. I hadn't planned for this to be on the itinerary of my New York trip, but after seeing how dire Swoosh's living conditions were, I decided to take him to his local Target to get him some necessary supplies. I originally set out to get him three things: a trash can, trash bags, and a handheld vacuum. But as we were walking through Target, we passed the broom aisle, and I asked, "You have a broom, right?" And his shoulders started to slowly rise into a shrug, and I went, "Dude!" Then we passed the Brita filter aisle, and I said, "You have one of these, right? You haven't just been drinking tap water this whole time, right?"
I mean, the sink's right there.
You know, Swoosh, normally when people move into a new place, they do a big Target run to get all the necessary cleaning supplies for their house.
What do you mean? I did do a Target run. Didn't you see that buffalo painting in my office?
Up until this point, Swoosh had been drying all of his dishes with paper towels, which I guess is good because I just assumed he was eating everything in his bare hands like a Neanderthal, so I think I'm saving him money in the long run. I'm really about to show my age here, but since I'm doing a whole video about cleaning, I just need to gush real quick about my favorite piece of cleaning equipment. This was one of the original three items I set out to get Swoosh before I knew how dire his situation was. This is completely unsponsored, by the way, but the Bissell Pet Hair Eraser Hand Vacuum has divided my life into two moments: the time spent before I had this vacuum and the time spent after. I love this vacuum so much that I've gifted it to friends on three separate occasions. Now, this next piece of advice I used to roll my eyes at, but after I started doing it, I've really been enjoying it. And that is to make your bed first thing in the morning. I used to think, why do I need to make my bed? I'm just going to get it messy again. But making your bed is having the first thing you do in the morning be something that benefits your future self. It helps set the tone for the day. And if you are able to complete that small task, then you're probably more likely to complete other more important tasks. No, making my bed didn't magically fix all my problems, but no matter what kind of day I was having, it was always nice ending it in a clean bed. Obviously, there's more to life than cleaning. I would know. I own all the Warrior Cat books. But I think everyone should enjoy the space they live in. I feel like a lot of us fall into a bad habit of dreading to do a task longer than it would take for us to just do said task. I definitely can be like that sometimes, but if you've been following along and been cleaning while this video played in the background, while your room might not be completely spotless, I hope you can see how much of a difference you made in only 10 minutes. Now imagine how much you can do in 20 minutes. Isn't cleaning while watching YouTube videos so fun? Isn't doing tasks so accomplishing?
So if you need to clean, go clean! Go clean your bedroom! Go clean your kitchen! Unclog that toilet! The world is your oyster! Get out there and clean!
Thank you.
When you're watching any animated piece of media, I think it's easy to forget that you're watching drawings move. Excuse me? What kind of Harry Potter dark magic is this? Since when did drawings move? I drew a picture of a dog once, but it hasn't moved at all, not even to play fetch. Well, what you're really watching isn't actually moving. What you're really watching is a series of individual frames played at a rapid speed on a liquid crystal display screen that emit photons into your eyeball receptors that get processed by your brain into what it perceives as movement. It was all a trickery, you see. A ruse that you fell for hook, line, and sinker. Now, a lot of you probably already know about the concept of the frame rate, but what I want you to understand is that in cartoons, every head turn, every blink, everything that happens had to be meticulously drawn by a person who studied anatomy and knows about physics and movement, knowing full well that their drawing was only going to be seen for a fraction of a fraction of a second. And you weren't even watching! You were on your phone! Today, I would like to turn back the sands of time and talk about some of the ways animators were able to achieve the illusion of life without the help of modern technology. I hope by watching you can better understand and appreciate the medium of animation as much as I do, because the amount of dedication and hard work that goes into just making drawings move is unreal. And if you're like me and already know a bit about animation history and find this kind of stuff fascinating, don't worry, I didn't have a lot of friends growing up either. Now, we know that animation is just copious amounts of drawings being shown in rapid succession. But how the fuck are we going to get people to look at copious amounts of drawings in rapid succession without a computer? Well, believe it or not, there's actually quite a few things we can do without even having to use a camera. One method we can try is by drawing out all of our frames on a stack of paper. I know that's the time-consuming part, but after we're done doing that, we'll hang up all our drawings side by side on a very long wall. Then we'll ride a bike next to the wall and continuously have our head turned facing the wall, and if we pedal fast enough, we'll zip by the drawings so fast that it'll look like they're moving.
Hey, look! It's a horse!
Okay, you're probably thinking, that's not how animation is made. And you're right. This method of animation is totally impractical, but not impossible. This type of human transportational animation has been done before in subway tunnels, with the results looking pretty legit. I mean, this minion looks like he's totally moving. I might as well be in the cinema. And for those of the gamer variety, YouTuber Pale of Pears was able to achieve this method of animation flawlessly in Minecraft. But if you wanted to do something more practical, you could instead take your drawings off the really long wall and then stack them up like a book and then just flip through the paper quickly, making a flip book. If you have some sticky notes lying around that you forgot about in a junk drawer somewhere, you can make a pretty simple ball bouncing animation really quickly, with the results being, you know, kind of cool. A fun fact, this type of animation was featured in every single copy of the Animorphs books, which I never read. I would just flip through the pages and watch the children in the corner transform into elephants and starfish and this weird blue alien centaur thing. And what the heck was going on in these books, man? Okay, this next method of showing people drawings in rapid succession is going to be a little bit crazy. I don't want to freak you out, but it's basically on the same level as rocket science, okay? We're gonna have to jump up a whole dimension for this one. What you're going to do is sculpt out a three-dimensional figure of whatever you want to animate. Let's animate, I don't know, this guy jumping. So first, I'm gonna sculpt my guy just standing there, just being a dude. This will be frame one. Now, okay, I know some of you are probably thinking, oh, I see where this is going. You're going to take a picture of the sculpture, then change its pose slightly, take a picture of that, and then slightly change the pose over and over while continuously starting and stopping the camera, making it seem like our subject has some sort of motion. No, actually, we're not going to be doing any of that. Cameras haven't been invented yet in this hypothetical. What we're doing instead is making a whole new sculpture that will be the next frame of our animation. So it'll be our guy again, bending his legs a little bit, getting ready for the jump. All right, neat. That's frame two. Now let's do this a total of, I don't know, 16 times? That sounds good. Let's also make the 16th sculpture look like it came before the first sculpture. So you understand it's going to go from the 16th sculpture back to the first one. It's a loop, like a TikTok. We're doing a TikTok loop. Now we're going to take all 16 of our sculptures and space them out evenly on a round table. Sorry, Arthur, I'm going to need this. Now, make the table spin. That's on you to figure out how to do. I don't know. Maybe get the bike guy from the first example to pedal or something. I doubt any of you are actually following along, but if you are, put all your sculptures on a spinning table right now. And make it quick, all right? I'm not going to wait for you. And now, for the final step, turn your lights on and off really quickly. And if we did everything right, the effect we get is mesmerizing. What's happening is that the light shines at the first sculpture, and then we turn the lights off. Cool. Then, as the table spins, the light will turn back on when the second sculpture is in the same position as the first. So we turn the lights on when the sculptures are in the same spot, and we turn them off when they're not. And what we end up seeing is all of our figures standing in a circle performing the animation, and we don't even register that the whole thing is spinning. And congratulations, you all know what a zoetrope is now. Which, I know, is a pretty fun word that you can whip out at parties, like, yeah, I know a unique word that starts with the letter Z that isn't xylophone. Another fun thing about the zoetrope was that a 3D rendering of one was featured in the Season 2 opening of Mob Psycho 100. So that's what that spinning thing in the intro was. It was a zoetrope. Zoetrope. Okay, let's talk about one more way we can show people drawings in quick succession without a camera, and it's the easiest method by far. So, all we need is this glitchy, abstract drawing like this. Huh, pretty cool and random, right? Except it's not. It's not random at all. I lied. Every line here is placed very deliberately. Let me show you something. If we take this floppy, transparent sheet full of vertical bars and cover up most of the drawing... Hey, look at that. The outline we end up seeing looks like one of them kitty cats. Now, if we slide the transparent sheet over and reveal different parts of the drawing, it looks like a kitty cat put it in a different position. And if we keep sliding the sheet over, revealing different parts of the drawing, look at him go! This is called a barrier grid animation, and with the right base drawing, you can make all sorts of animations that don't hurt to look at all. And also, I just want to point out that a barrier grid animation was also featured in the Season 2 opening of Mob Psycho 100. Hey, do you guys want to watch anime later? So all these different methods of showing people drawings in quick succession, I don't know if there's a word for it, but I'm calling it physical animation. Like animation you can hold and touch with your fingers, you know? All those warrior cat animation memes, that's digital animation, right? This is physical. It's the real deal. But there's one form of physical animation that we haven't talked about yet that's unarguably the most popular and the most important form of physical animation to have ever existed on Earth. Excuse me. Okay, now we're gonna use cameras. Okay, they finally figured it out. With the invention of film, showing people multiple images in quick succession had never been easier. Now we can take something from real life, burn an image of that into a film strip, process it, and then shine a light through it again to get a recreation of the image. And if we roll this whole strip of film over this strobe light, we get moving pictures. That's why they're called movies. 'Cause they move. What the fuck? A lot of times, film was used to capture the movements of real people. But it was also used in the same way to capture the movements of people of the animated variety. Let's take a look at an old, old cartoon. The 1968 animated Batman series. The first time Batman has ever appeared in the animation form. You know, the really, really old Batman cartoon that had onomatopoeias appear on the screen during fight scenes? Boom! Pow! Ka-chow! Except they didn't! They didn't do that in the cartoon. Visually showing the verbiage of impacts was exclusively an Adam West thing. In the cartoon, you gotta see those impacts! Hey, can I ask you a thought-provoking question? What the f*** am I looking at? I know it's Batman high-kicking a goon, but how is it moving? This frame was captured on film, so there had to be a physical camera to capture it, right? So where is this drawing? It's not on a computer. Computers in the 60s looked like this. So where is this? So every animated movie and animated TV show and animated anime before the year 2000-ish used what's called cell animation. This frame of Batman was hand-painted, that's right, painted with special paint onto a transparent celluloid sheet, or cell. And then this transparent sheet was laid on top of a hand-painted background, and then this goon that got kicked, well, he had to be painted on his own cell sheet too, and then this image of sandwiched art was captured onto a film thing, a strip, shit. Then the Batman cell would come off and be replaced by a whole new hand-painted cell of Batman, and then that frame would be captured, and then the whole process would repeat again and again until the shot was done. This one shot that lasted a little over a second used 14 different hand-painted drawings of Batman, and the goon had 6, just for a second. Now, because having to hand-paint 20 different images for 1 second is insane, there are some things we can do to cut corners without having to sacrifice too much quality. Like in this shot, Robin takes 5 frames to turn his head, but his body doesn't move, so we can paint his body once on its own cell, and now we only need to paint 5 different heads. And since we already have all the frames painted, we can just use the same frames in reverse to make his head turn the other way. And you don't need to pay a background artist to paint a background if you just use blue. A big part of cell animation was being able to animate pieces of a character independently of each other. That's actually why so many old cartoon characters had accessories around their necks, so the animators could separate the characters' heads from their bodies, making it easier to animate. Fred wasn't rocking that ascot just because it was trendy. One of the nice things about using a computer to animate is that you can play back what you've animated and clearly see if your timing is correct and if there's any quick adjustments you can make. Being able to see what your previous frames are is so important there's actually a term for it called onion skinning. But animators pre-2K didn't have computers to rewatch their work, so here's what they did instead. Before they even put paint onto a cell, they first had to draw all their frames out onto a piece of paper, and they didn't work on the frames in chronological order. Like, they didn't go, okay, I just drew the first frame of Batman, okay, here's the second frame of Batman, okay, I'm gonna go do the third frame of Batman, okay, you do the fourth frame though. That way of animating is called straight-ahead animation, and some people use it, but the results look pretty chaotic, but it's still used pretty effectively for effects and concert visuals. But most of the time, animators will animate a character from pose to pose. They'll draw out all the important key poses a character will make on paper, and then they'll hold the pieces of paper between each of their fingers, and then quickly flip between their drawings just to get an idea of what a drawing that goes in between those key poses would look like. That's called in-betweening, just so you know. And they still wouldn't be able to get a full playback of their animation until every pencil drawing was captured on film and processed. They just had to trust their page-flipping technique and their highly trained eyeballs and go, yeah, that looks about right. Let's bring out the paint. And because there are hundreds of shots all having to be animated without a computer, can you really blame the animators that some shots of Batman looked like this? Or this? It was old, remember? Old things are bad. Okay, I kind of have a secret. Remember when I said, let's look at an old, old cartoon? Well, I might have overemphasized how old the Batman cartoon is. By the time the Batman cartoon came out, the movie Bambi had been out for 25 years. And are you aware of how fucking fluid the animation in Bambi is? Dude, Bambi goes so fucking hard. Walt literally brought in deer from the fucking woods into their studio just so the animators could be like, oh, that's neat. That's how deers move. I understand this more now. What the fuck? I honestly thought the Batman show came out way earlier in the animation timeline because of how it looked. Obviously, these two things were created by different studios with different animators and different budgets,
And TV animation always has to create more animation per budget, but all the same techniques and equipment used to make an episode of Batman were the exact same techniques and equipment used to make an episode of Bambi. I don't mean that as a dunk on Batman, I'm more so impressed with how amazing Bambi looks, especially since, while it came out, World War II was currently happening. So because celluloid sheets were used to animate every TV show, movie, and anime there has ever been before the year 2000-ish, by my calculations, there are millions of cell sheets out there. Like this single frame of Batman kicking, it's on a cell sheet somewhere. And more importantly, who owns it? Many of the cells that still exist have been sold to the general public. But because of how the paint and time works, cell sheets need to be kept very well preserved. So since cells are very hard to preserve, and because they're not making any new ones, some cells are worth a lot of money. This cell and original background from My Neighbor Totoro sold for $84,000. While I'm writing the script, there's currently an auction going on for this cell from The Jungle Book for $10,000. And I own this cell of Squidward Laughing that I got at a convention for $300. It's not an original background. The background's a print. And it's actually not even the correct background for the shot. But I'm just pointing out that not all cells are thousands of dollars. You know, they made millions of these. So you can get a cell from a TV show for a couple hundred. And then you get to own a frame of animation. Like, that belongs to you now. Which I think is super cool. This moment of Squidward laughing belongs to me. And you can't have it. So if you ever visit some friends who really like cartoons, there's a good chance that they have an animation cell somewhere on display. And those are just a handful of ways that animators were able to achieve the illusion of life without a computer. And I do just want to say, just because something was animated on a computer doesn't make it any less artistic. Yes, computers make the process easier and more streamlined, absolutely. It's still a human expressing their creativity and being in control of that. Did you hear me? It's a human expressing themselves and being in control creatively. I hope you enjoyed learning a bit about animation history. There's still quite a few things that I didn't get to cover, like how did Walt animate this panning, parallaxing shot of Bambi where the trees move on separate layers? What kind of technology did they create to make trees move at different speeds? So much hard work and talent is involved in every piece of animation you see, and because of animation, we're able to tell incredible stories that are nothing like anything we ever see in our day-to-day lives. And before I go, can we talk about the intro to the Batman series, please? Oh my god! I just want to go over some quick announcements. I'll be quick, don't worry. The Scribble Showdown Tour is coming back in January to a city near you, but this time the kiddies aren't invited. That's right, only the adults this time. Leave the children at home with the babysitter. If you're like me and are behind on your Christmas shopping, there's some new holiday merch in the merch store, so check it out. But if the shipping won't get there in time, then there's also the Oddballs graphic novel available in retail stores like Target and Barnes & Noble and Walmart. I'll probably see you all in the new year, so happy new year. Thank you.
Uncle James, can we play Space Explorer?
Shut up for a second. I'm watching this unnaturally charming preschool show.
Why are you watching a show for babies?
Okay, kid. This show is extremely sophisticated and can be enjoyed by both children and adults. So why don't you shut your ignorant mouth and find someone who actually loves you to play your silly little space game?
Crikey, Bingo! You can't say that to your sister! You have to say nice things. Treat others how you want to be treated, mate.
Oh, I really needed to hear that today. This episode of The Odd Ones Out is called... Are you familiar with the Australian animated preschool show Bluey? If your TikTok algorithm is anything like mine, you'll have seen a bunch of clips of this blue cartoon dog all over your For You page, paired with Subway Surfer highlights. Wow, TikTok, clips of a foreign preschool show? I thought you were supposed to cater to my interests. Let's read some of the comments on these Bluey TikToks, shall we?
No shame, I'm a senior in high school, but I watch Bluey religiously, and this episode had me all in my feels. I'd say I had a good childhood, but I binge Bluey because adult life is so stressful and I'm sad, and it reminds me of a simpler time. Bluey is for everyone. I'm literally 27, and it's such a comfort show.
Bluey is absolutely destroying me as a teenager who wishes he had this childhood.
In my teen years and watching full episodes of Bluey.
Watching Bluey high is such a fun time, dude.
Huh. You know, to me, I'm just thinking out loud here. It seems like a lot of these comments weren't made by preschoolers. What's going on here? Now, if your brain is anything like mine, you'll be thinking, why is this show about Australian dogs so popular with adults who don't even have children? In fact, why does Bluey have over 5 billion views on TikTok, is searched more than Paw Patrol, Peppa Pig, and Coco Melon, and why is this episode number 8 in IMDb's highest rated episodes of all time? This phenomenon intrigued me, and I was also bullied by a large number of people on my own team to watch the show. So, one day I sat down, put on the first episode, and...
I watched all 141 episodes.
Hang on, James! 141? But there's only 129 on Disney Plus! Don't worry, my fellow obsessive Bluey fan, we're gonna talk about that later. I work in cartoons, and I've been to furry conventions, so Bluey has always been on my radar of shows I'm aware of. And just from the clips that I saw, I adored the art style, especially the backgrounds. So much so that my very own background team has studied and taken inspiration from Bluey's backgrounds. Here you can see my backgrounds taking on a more Bluey aesthetic. I mean, just look at the colors, especially their greens. Oh my god! Doesn't just looking at these backgrounds bring a smile to your face? While I was watching the first season, I realized, oh, okay, I see why this show is so popular. Because it's genuinely a good show. We've already established that the show is great to look at, but the voice acting, the sound design, and the music are equally as amazing. So it's also great to listen to. While most, if not all, other preschool shows will hire adults who can sound like toddlers, Bluey gets actual children to voice the actual child characters. Somehow, every Australian toddler in Bluey can be so expressive and emotional. It's impressive that the show got such a talented cast of child actors who don't sound annoying to listen to. Or maybe it's just their Aussie accents that I like, I don't know. The characters have so much personality, and the comedic timing is something I've never seen before in a preschool show. I can't think of a single time Coco Melon has made me laugh this much, or even smile. The four main characters are Chili and Bandit, the parents, and Bluey and Bingo, the 6 and 4-year-old daughters. Yes, Bluey is a girl. You gotta catch up, dude. Come on, it's 2023. The show also does not hide the fact that it's Australian. It references multiple Australian locations and animals, they call flip-flops thongs, and they say things like, "Honor!" While some preschool shows focus on teaching kids numbers and letters, Bluey focuses on the relationship of the family and teaches its lessons through the make-pretend games that the family plays. And I want to emphasize how perfect these two parents are. These two are the most patient and emotionally aware parents I've seen... ever. There are multiple times where the parents apologize to their kids for, frankly, not even doing anything wrong. The dad is, like, the most perfect dad role model, okay? Check this out. Bingo was sad that dad didn't get to see the leaf bug outside. She was like,
"Daddy, come and see. Come here, Daddy. Quickly."
But he was too busy playing with Bluey, you know, being a present father figure in her life. And at night, she's all boo-hoo about it, and he kneels down, gets to her level, and apologizes, explaining that he didn't hear her. Now, I don't have any kids, but if I spent my weekend running around with toddlers, and then right before bed, one of them said, "You didn't get to see the ladybug," I would say, "That's okay. I've already seen a ladybug. Good night." In one episode, Chicken Rat, Bingo lost her favorite toy, and Mom asks, "Well, where was the last place you had it?" The two retrace Bingo's steps, and through flashbacks, we see this bizarre day that Bluey and Bingo had. The very first flashback we see, Bluey and Bingo are cooking a chicken rat egg while wearing weird costumes. And through this creative backwards storytelling, we piece together what a chicken rat is and how the kids ended up in this situation. It's episodes like that which really make me appreciate the care that went into this show and really sets Bluey apart from every other preschool show. Most preschool shows stick to a formula and talk down to the viewer because typically their viewers are short. As a childless adult, I don't want to say, this show teaches you how to be a good parent, because I don't know how to be a good parent. But on paper, there are lessons in this show that are just as important for the parents to learn. So while watching season one, I got a feel for the world and characters. I started to piece together, okay, this show is depicting perfect parents. It's well written and wholesome. Anyone, regardless of having kids, can enjoy the show. Let's watch the rest, shall we? Season 2 and Season 3 is when things go from 100 to 1,000. This is when episodes cover deep and emotional topics that I think toddlers are too baby to understand. Let's see, there's the struggles of keeping romance in your relationship alive when you have two toddlers to look after, why taking time to play with your kids can have a ripple effect that lasts into adulthood, feeling inadequate as a mom, what it's like having a dad in the army, parents disagreeing on different parenting styles, moms getting tipsy implied, dealing with infertility, abandonment, potentially a miscarriage, that one's still up in the air, and death. Actually, that one was in season one. You can't even compare Bluey to other preschool shows. Like, what the fuck was Dora the Explorer even doing? Was she even trying to entertain the adults who are also going to be watching her show? Dora had the same formula every episode, and there was a map who sang a song that was just repeating the same three words 14 times. Season 2, there's an episode where Chili is telling Bluey about how when she was a baby, she wasn't crawling or rolling over as fast as the other babies in her mom group, and she compared Bluey's developmental delay to the other babies and felt inadequate as a mother. And then this pink poodle comes to console her, looks directly into the camera, and says, "You're doing great." I'm a he-him male with no kids, and I still get teary-eyed just thinking about that episode. People will tell you that Bluey is a kid's show that adults can enjoy too. No, that episode wasn't for the kids. It was directed at all the moms watching who are doubting their motherhood. When has Coco Melon ever done something like this? All the babies stop singing mid-nursery rhyme, look directly into the camera and say, "Hey mom, just wanted to say you're doing a great job raising me. Keep up the good work." Like, no, that'll never happen. I'm still not done talking about how impressive the writing in Bluey is, okay? So please indulge me for a bit. I'm switching into video essay mode as we do a deep dive into the themes and symbolisms of one of my favorite Bluey episodes, Flatpak. The entire episode is an allegory of human history told from a religious and scientific perspective, respectively. And it touches on the ever-growing relationships between a mother and child, all within 7 minutes. No, I'm not reading too deep into this. Let's begin. Bandit and Chili set out to build a new swing for their porch, and we get this great meta self-aware joke from Bandit when he complains about the instructions saying,
I'm not taking advice from a cartoon dog.
Meanwhile, the girls play games with the leftover packing materials that are thrown into the yard by their parents. Bluey and Bingo are given bubble wrap, which they pretend is water, so they pretend they're fish. Then they're given cardboard, which they pretend is land, so they pretend they're frogs. Then they're given tails and become lizards, then T-Rexes, then birds, then furry little animals. Is this chart starting to look familiar? Then they're monkeys, and then bipedal cave dogs. What? Is that you, Mr. Darwin? Were these girls playing out the evolution of man through a silly game? Now, if you didn't like the evolution symbolism, I know you're going to love the parents being an allegory for the creators. You know, the big guy upstairs, the whatever you believe is going on. The parents supply the girls with their entire world. They give the girls the sea, the land, the volcanoes, and the trees. In these cave paintings the girls make that tell their history, they depict the parents as gods, higher up and in the clouds. They do look a little angry. Perhaps they're still in the Old Testament. The parents being the creators is hinted at again by Chili when she looks at the girls lovingly saying, "Aww,
we made them.
The parents give the girls an Allen wrench, aka tools, and one industrial revolution later, the girls evolve from cave dogs to modern dogs, building futuristic towns and spaceships. Throughout the episode, as the girls go through different stages of evolution, they also go through different stages of their lives as a mother and child. As fish, Bluey says that she's the mommy fish and Bingo is the baby. Then as frogs, Bingo pretends to be a toddler and Bluey teaches her how to catch flies. Then as T-Rexes, Bingo becomes a big girl. Then as cave dogs, she's a teenager. And finally, in the last stage, she's all grown up, ready to traverse the universe on her own. She thanks Bluey for looking after her and leaves on her spaceship. Bluey, now much older as shown by her having to use a cane, crosses the styrofoam threshold which represents her death and she gets to live with her creators. All while this orchestral masterpiece is playing and suddenly you realize you're crying? When did that start? And then Bandit ties the allegory all together at the very end saying, "Ah, this is heaven." Are you joshing me right now? This preschool show was able to tell a clever allegorical story with tasteful religious undertones in how many minutes? Did you just make me feel emotions over a cartoon dog? This isn't the only episode you can make an in-depth video essay on. There are plenty of other episodes that hit just as hard as this one. While I was doing research for this video, it got me thinking about another foreign animated kid show with 8-minute long episodes that focus on a family of two toddlers. Except, unlike Bluey, this show is universally hated. Caillou, it's Caillou. I had this idea in my head that people only hated Caillou because he was a more accurate portrayal of a toddler. But in the handful of Caillou episodes I watched, I was reminded, oh no, that's why people hate Caillou. Because he sucks. His brattiness isn't even important to the plot. It comes out of nowhere. Caillou will be getting ready in the morning, he spills cat food and says, Gilbert, look what you did. He's at the beach and this bird who's done nothing wrong gets told to go away. And there's a bunch more examples of Caillou being a whiny piece of shit. And I can't help but think that Caillou's screeching, piercing, whiny voice does not help him be a likable character. I bet real toddlers can be little punk sometimes, but why would you show that in your cartoon and not have him learn any lesson? There's never a lesson learned in Caillou. Since Caillou was a brat all the time, a lot of people, myself included, wondered why Caillou's parents never disciplined or even tried to change his bratty behavior. But after I thought about it, I realized it would be a very weird episode of Caillou if one day Caillou's mom was like, Caillou? What did you do to your sister? I made her look pretty, Mommy. Caillou, that was Mommy's expensive makeup. How many times do I have to tell you not to touch Mommy's things? Come here, you little twit.
Mommy, why are you hitting me?
You're getting a spanking.
Mommy, you're hurting
me. I've had enough of you, Caillou. I hate you.
That kid got what was coming to him.
I don't know. Maybe that episode would be cathartic to some parents. Anyways, getting back to the actual best children's show ever, even though Bluey is literally the most mentally intelligent and educational show for the minds of children, teens, adults, and parents, some unnamed mouse company decided to censor some of the episodes on their platform. It's the strangest things that got censored, too. This horse pooping, Bandit getting hit in the groin, Bandit saying the word groin, this hitchhiker is no longer from Argentina, that one's kinda weird, this pretend cat saying it will pretend pee on the curtains, Bandit hinting at wanting to get snip snip down there. Adults, you know what I'm talking about. And the last 10 episodes of season 3, which are some of the deepest episodes in the series, aren't even on Disney Plus. But that could just be a licensing thing, I don't know. I kept waiting for the infertility episode. I heard so much about it. I finally got to the last episode on Disney Plus and thought, oh, okay, they're saving the deepest one for last. Alright, let's do this. And the episode was about the family playing courtroom to determine if Bandit farted. I hope this video convinced you to give Bluey a chance. I mean, you're still here listening to a grown man talk about it, so you gotta be at least a little interested in it. Through its relatable and realistic portrayal of family life, the show has not only entertained, but also taught valuable life lessons to its viewers. The show's emphasis on play and family bonding is so refreshing to see compared to the usual fast-paced, mind-numbing shows aimed at kids. Bluey reminds us all the importance of spending time with loved ones and finding joy in the everyday. And if you still don't want to watch Bluey, have you thought about getting high and watching it? Thank you all so much for watching this episode of James getting obsessed over something he probably shouldn't be. Did you have a favorite part about this episode? Yeah, that was my favorite part too. Just one quick announcement. My newest Oddballs book is available on my website right now, so if you enjoyed the show, be sure to head over and reserve your copy today. It'll be full of new stories and illustrations and will be released on September 6th, and I'm super excited to hear what you all think of it. Anyway, thanks again for watching. Big shout out to my amazing team. They really crushed it this video, and you better be wearing your seatbelts. Today's video was sponsored by Carrots. We're actually all right if you put other stuff on us. I wouldn't consider my parents health nuts, more like health kernels. They would never buy unhealthy snacks, but they wouldn't force me and my siblings to go outside and play because it was always burning hot. And we'd just lick the melted candy off the sidewalk anyways. They would never buy sugary cereal. The most sugary cereal my parents got was Honey Nut Cheerios. But my mom would mix the Honey Nut Cheerios with regular ones to make it more healthy or something. So I would start every day spending 15 minutes picking out the regular Cheerios from the cereal bowl. That's right, my parents didn't buy us cable, Cocoa Puffs, or candy. My life sucked. We were allowed to eat sugary cereal for one day out of the year, and that was on Christmas morning. It's a fun tradition, and we still do it to this day. As a kid, I would always get jealous when my friends would pull out their Lunchables and tell me how much their family ate out and all the sugary cereals they got to eat. Meanwhile, I had a PB&J sandwich on wheat bread with the crust still on, but it's okay because I like the crust. But now looking back, I'm just so grateful that my mom cared enough about my health to instill these healthy eating habits into me at a young age. I mean, I don't follow them anymore because I live on my own and I don't know how to cook and bagel bites taste so darn good, but I'm still thankful my mom taught me what I should be doing. Now, if there's any parents watching this going, I like the way this James's mom character thinks. Good. I would recommend to all parents that you should be teaching your kids healthy eating habits as soon as possible. I definitely didn't appreciate it at the time, but now that I'm older and wiser, I'm thankful that I like the taste of wheat bread. My parents had a saying, the wider the bread, the sooner you're dead. They would always get wheat bread. Even for hot dog and hamburger buns, they got wheat. Some of you might have had to use sandwich bread as hot dog buns. You're poor, I get it, but at least you didn't have to use wheat bread. However, now that I live on my own, I still get the wheat bread because I don't want to die young. I still have YouTube videos to make. Some things never change, I guess. Except I do get the white hot dog buns. The wheat ones are still gross. When I was a very little kid, my dad's work was throwing a barbecue get-together thing, and I got to eat as many hot dogs on white bread as I could handle. But the best part of it all was I got to wash it down with soda. Listen, I was very sugar-deprived back home. I had to catch up on all the sugar I was missing out on. I don't remember what the soda was exactly, but let's just say for the sake of this story, it was an original bottle of Coke from the 1800s. It might as well have had cocaine because I was addicted to all the white powdery stuff they added into that drink. Pretty soon, my tummy started to get the rumblies, and I had no idea what was causing it. So I told my dad, "Dad, my tummy hurts." And he said, "It's probably because you're dehydrated. Here, have some soda." And I still respected my dad at that age and thought he knew what he was talking about, so I drank more soda. And then I threw up and my dad said, "We should leave." I mentioned this next story in my first book, available in bookstores near you. Be on the lookout for book number 2, coming out at the end of March. But one time my mom bought a giant 3-pound bag of Skittles. I forgot what she bought them for, but they definitely weren't for us. She locked them away in a closet because she knew what us kids would do if we got our grubby little hands on the Skittles. This wasn't the first time my mom had to hide candy from us, but this time she forgot to lock the closet, leaving the Skittles unprotected. And me and my older brother ate the entire thing, and we would have gotten away with it, but then something came up. Puke. I threw up on the family room carpet. My mom saw how rainbow the throw up was and immediately put two and two together and knew that we had gotten into our Skittles. The funny part of this story is that my older brother got punished, but I didn't. Because according to my mom, I had already suffered enough. And that's why that story is in the chapter titled, Perks of Being the Younger Brother. Anyways, don't eat so much candy that you throw up. Okay, I'm going to be talking about M&Ms for a while, so to make it go faster, instead of saying M&Ms, I'm just going to say mmm. In one of my older videos, I said that my favorite candy bar was mmm, and every time I would tell people that, they would always say, "That's not a candy bar." I just can't do this anymore. But then something interesting happened. A year after that video was posted, mmm actually released a bar version of their candy. So now I can absolutely say that mmm is my favorite candy bar and not get any weird looks. Someone at the mmm marketing team sent me a box of mmm candy bars, and I think they wanted me to promote it, but because I said that mmms are my favorite candy bar, whenever I go to a convention, sometimes you guys bring me mmm candy, which is very thoughtful, but you know, I like other things too, like Oreos and Twix and money. You know, I'm just saying you don't have to bring me all the time. When I was visiting London, I went to the store with my friends Adam and Mads. And if you don't know about the London store, it's 4 stories tall, 35,000 square feet, and according to Wikipedia, the largest sweet store in the world. So it was kind of big. Once I stepped inside, my first thought was, okay, this is too much. It was like the candy forest scene in Willy Wonka, except it was all chocolate and expensive. In one part of the store, you could make your own custom mms with a picture and two phrases. So for the picture, I googled my cartoon self, held up my phone to the camera, and it bloody worked, mate. And for the phrases, naturally we wanted to write something that was meaningful, so we wrote Mad Stinks and Adam Smells. But the employee didn't allow us to write that because it was too negative and went against the brand. So knowing we were not allowed to roast each other, the next phrases we decided to print was Get Mads and Something Else YT. It wasn't creative, but without being able to make fun of each other, we didn't have a lot to work with. But those phrases weren't allowed either, because they were the names of some YouTubers, so they got flagged by the system, and they told us, you'll need permission from the YouTuber, even though you're both right here. Listen, boys, I'm just a employee. I don't want to get sued. On one hand, I'm glad that has a system in place to prevent people from stealing. But on the other hand, it's just mms. What do you think we're going to do with them? So after 2 failed attempts at getting the phrase we wanted, we settled on getting Adam and Mads. At least I still got my cannonball guy printed, even though technically this image is copyrighted, so you'll be hearing from my lawyers soon. One of the disadvantages of being a YouTuber is the lack of benefits. We don't even have dental. And with all the junk food I'm eating and the flossing I'm not doing, I should probably see one. Can I confess something? I didn't know dentists were optional. I thought they summoned you to their offices like jury duty. That's what it felt like when I was a kid. I've never gotten a cavity, though. At least not one that I know of. So at least I'm doing something right. Now comes the part of the video where I give you advice on eating healthy. But I'm still working on that myself. And when I don't know what to eat, I can't help but biting down on a delicious carrot. Carrots are the most popular vegetable in the world, having been nominated as the best orange thing ever. Use code ODDONE next time you purchase a carrot to get 5,000 free carrot points and a bunch of weird looks at the grocery store. Give your body the fuel it needs. You wouldn't pour soda in a car engine and expect it to run. Of course, that's not really the best metaphor to use because you also wouldn't pour water into a car and expect it to run. I guess everyone drinks gasoline because cars and people are the same. But the point is, you've only got one body, so you should take care of it. A Pokemon Nuzlocke is a set of rules that turn a normal playthrough of Pokemon into a hardcore playthrough of Pokemon. You're only allowed to catch the first Pokemon you see per route, and if any of them faint, they actually don't live anymore, and you can never use them again. The game I will be Nuzlocking will be Pokemon Ruby. Not because I'm copying Jaden, but because Gen 3 is my favorite generation, and out of the 3 games, Ruby was the one I played as a kid and bought with my own money. It was $40. Imagine paying that much for a copy of the game now. Also, full disclosure, I've seen other PokeTubers who have a deep, uncanny knowledge of this game and use calculators to make the best, most optimal plays, but I'm not quite at that level yet, so I might make choices that some could consider suboptimal.
I thought grass was, like, super effective against water. Why is he super effective against me?
But if you can forgive me and look past all that, then let's get out of this truck and start our adventure. Let's see. Someone's already picked Torchic, and when I played this as a kid, I picked Treecko. So that means we're left with Kipmud. After defeating my rival's Treecko, I headed to Oldale Town and caught my first Pokemon that would be joining our team, Floof the Poochyena. I'm guessing naming Pokemon after pets is very common in Nuzlocke. By the way, this is how Floof's very first fight went.
Oh! Oh! Oh my god.
Hey, do you want to learn how to catch Pokemon? No. I'm good. Well, that's too bad. First, you want to get him weak by throwing tiny rocks at him. Traveling through Route 104, I caught
a Zigzagoon.
Iggy the Zigzagoon. I'm probably not going to train her up or anything, but she will be useful teaching useless HMs to. What's that, Iggy? You have an ability where you pick up random objects? And you picked up a revive? Oh, Iggy.
I can't use these.
Wandering through Petalburg Woods, some guy asked me if I'd seen any Pokemon named
Shroomish.
The main reason Gen 3 is my favorite is because the best Pokemon ever, Breloom, makes his debut in this game. Why, if I found a Shroomish in this forest, I would probably react like this.
This guy was being truthful.
I named Shroomish Goat because not only is he the greatest of all time, but because I was also working on this other video about goats, so I had a lot of goats on the mind. We made it to Rustboro Town and challenged Roxanne, the rock-type gym leader, but thankfully we picked the water starter, so, you know, Kidmup, do your thing. I caught a Talo on Route 116, and keeping with the naming Pokemon after pets theme, I named him RE2. Not to spoil anything, but don't get too attached to RE2, Jaden. We sailed to Juford Town and saw that the second gym was a fighting-type gym, so that meant fighting-type weakness. It was RE2's time to shine.
He's, like, actually a higher level. I didn't like that. He's too high of a level.
Despite being a lower level, we decided to wing it and managed to defeat everyone's Pokemon, only having to tap out at Brawly's Makahuita, which Kidmup mopped the floor with. Hey, when did you start walking on two legs, Kidmup? The next HM we learn is this terrible move, Flash. The only thing Flash is good for is lighting up a dark cave that technically isn't even required to progress through the game if you know where you're going. I, however, do not. Currently, Goat is the only one on the team who can learn Flash. But I'm like 80% sure once a Pokemon learns an HM move, they can't unlearn it. So I really don't want to teach this S-tier Pokemon an unforgettable F-tier move. Oh boy, an Abra! I bet he can learn Flash. Oh boy, a Zubat! Okay, I'm kind of fudging the rules here. This Zubat wasn't technically the first Pokemon I saw on this route, but does it even count as an encounter if all you do is look at a Pokemon and then they teleport away?
Excuse me?
Look, I just need this useless Pokemon to learn this unrequired move. Zubat, I'm calling you Mr. Flash and immediately teaching you...
No!
Goat, you can learn Flash.
Yay!
After clearing out Team Magma from a museum, we were ready to take on Watson, the electric-type gym leader. Luckily, we picked the water ground starter, so... Kidmup, do your thing. Now what? Do I go here? Here? How did I get here? During my wandering, both the Pokemon I named after pets evolved into bigger versions of themselves, and Goat learned Headbutt.
Can I get rid of Flash?
No!
Hey, lady, I'm kind of lost, so I'm entering random houses and asking NPCs where I should go.
Oh, you have harbor mail? I'll trade you that for my coin case.
Coin case?
You know, for gambling.
Gambling? Listen, I don't have a problem. The reason I'm this excited is because one of the prizes you can win at the casino is a Pokemon. A Pokemon that may help me build the perfect team. So, before I checked what the prizes actually were, I bought 500 coins for a measly 10,000 Pokédollars.
Just TMs? Dolls? I just wasted a lot of money, didn't I?
Good news, though. Goat evolved into his perfect form and learned Mach Punch.
Right.
Eventually, I talked to the right NPC, taught Iggy Rock Smash, and while exploring a fiery path, I caught my first fire-type Pokemon.
Okay.
Numel.
Let's go, man!
Even though Numels can be found in the desert, have a big hump on their back, and evolve into something called Camerupt, for some reason, I never looked at this Pokemon and thought, camel. I always thought, fire cow. So that's why I named her Cooked Beef. Then, on Route 114, we encountered a Zangoose.
Hello!
I have no clue what this Pokemon does, but it looks way cooler than all the Oddishes and tiny birds I kept running into, so it had to be awesome. Cooked Beef, the 9 levels you have on this goose are more than enough to weaken it. Hit him with an...
Oh, please don't. Oh!
cooked beef.
So my only fire type died to a quick attack that did 50 damage. Zangoose, or should I say Beef Eater, you can join the team for now, but just know, we could have killed you at any point. It was a challenge not to kill you.
We headed up a mountain and fought Maxie, the leader of Team Magma, who had his own floof Pokemon, which Goat took care of, and he had his own evolved cooked beef.
I sure wish I had one of those on the team. Hey, Beef Eater, why don't you make yourself useful and fight that Crobat?
Okay, that's kind of cool. As we headed down the mountain, who did I encounter but...
Who's the new Pokemon?
Another Numel. Immediately, I abandoned Beef Eater to make room for... Return of King. Before we take on gym number 4, I think I figured out a way to get Goat to forget the move Flash without having to beat him over the head with a 2x4. A little Pidgey told me that Goat was about to learn a new move at his next level. So by placing him in the Pokemon daycare and doing some light cardio outside, he'll level up, learn the new move, and forget Flash. And my plan worked like a charm.
Yeah.
It really sucks that this is the only way to get Pokemon to forget an HM move. You'd think they'd have some, I don't know, a move deleter NPC or something. Gosh. Now, you'd think that since I picked the water starter, that the fire type gym wouldn't be an issue. But it was. Floof and I quickly learned why biting lava was a bad idea.
Okay!
Thankfully, Kidmup, who I don't know why I didn't send out first, took out both of Flannery's Slugmas with no issue. But then, she sent out Torkoal. Even though Kidmup was using a super effective move, he only did this much damage. Meanwhile, Torkoal's body slams were doing this much damage. And paralyzing us. Okay, Goat, I know you're the goat, but you understand why you can't fight a fire turtle, right? RE2, looks like you're up. Finish her off with a steel wing.
Ah! Dude!
RE2! No!
What do we do?
None of you are great choices. What I really need is a turn to heal up Kidmup, but...
Hey, Iggsy. Are you aware of the concept... taking one for the team? Given the dire circumstances, this felt like the best choice. Sorry, Iggsy.
With Kidmup healed, we managed to get Torkoal's health really low, but then Kidmup refused to finish the fight because he was, in his words, immobilized by love. Kidmup, I know you're letting this turtle body slam you on purpose, and you're sick for it!
Do you really think we have a future together?
Okay, Goat. I know this is a fire turtle, but she's mostly using body slams. Could you please punch this turtle's head off without falling in love? We earned our 4th gym badge, but it wasn't without some casualties. RE2 and Iggsy, we wouldn't have made it this far without you. Thanks for everything. We traveled into a sandstorm where I picked up 2 Pokemon, this fossil, and this weird Pokemon I've never seen before, Baltoy. Alright, King, my second chance at a fire type. I know this isn't your natural habitat, but why don't we train here in the desert for a bit? Oh, you found a Baltoy. I just caught one of those. I'm not sure what its moves are, though. God! Okay, team, I know everyone is upset this thing shares a species with the Pokemon who blew up King, but it possesses psychic abilities that I believe could be very useful. So please everyone give a warm welcome to King Eater. No one step on it. We headed back to Petalburg City and faced gym number 5, my dad. Also, I brought Odd One-ish just in case we had another Iggsy-type situation.
Am I an integral member of the team?
You sure are, bud. Despite a few close calls...
Who? Dude! 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 Finish him off.
No!
Everyone, including Odd One-ish, made it out alive.
Oh my god.
Good thing we have free healthcare. I don't know what I'd do if someone took away my free healthcare. Not right now, Goat. Across the water on Route 118, I caught Pikachu the Electrike.
Great.
I don't know, he's electric like Pikachu, and his head kind of looks like pickles, so... Whatever, having an electric type on the team is huge. After inspecting all the Pokemon I had, I figured Mr. Flash's flying poison moves could be useful. So I evolved him into Golbat, and then... Here you go, daycare lady!
Alright, my favorite Pokemon, who wants some ice cream? Gosh, I love you guys. I couldn't ask for a better team right here.
At Fort Tree City, we were ready to take on Winona, the flying-type gym leader. Wait, this weird lizard's blocking our path. Kidmup, can you... Oh, cool, you're back on four legs again. Also, Pikachu, why are you blue? The only thing that stood between me and Winona was this incredibly hard two-piece puzzle.
How do I get through this? Oh, figured out.
Pikachu was able to spark Winona's Swellow, and Kidmup, through sheer willpower, tanked all of Altaria's earthquakes, narrowly avoiding death by 8 hit points. Good work, Kidmup. Pikachu, you know what to do. I found a TM for Ice Beam on an abandoned ship, and King Eater, you can learn Ice Beam? I'm sorry it's taken me this long to realize how awesome of a Pokemon you are. You know, King Eater, with you on the team, I think we'll be okay without a fire type. I entered Lily Cove City, and my rival wanted a rematch. Kidmup knocked out her Swellow, no problem, but then she sent out Grovyle. Ooh, I know the perfect matchup for this. King Eater, why don't you show this grass type that new move you learned?
Dude! Duh! Are you gonna use the hyper potion? No!
No! I can't believe I got that upset at losing a Pokemon that before this challenge, I had never even considered playing with. If any members of the Claydol lover community are watching, I'm sorry, I didn't know he hated grass. All right, team, we're not fighting any more gyms until each one of you is in peak physical shape. Floof, why haven't you evolved into Houndoom yet? What about this fossil? Is this fossil any good? We picked the plant one. We got the plant. What about Mr. Flash? Has anyone seen Mr. Flash? Why hasn't that loser evolved yet? Hey, buddy. So listen. We're friends, right? You know, Goat had to stay in the daycare once. Yeah, it was to forget the move... Flash. Look, Mr. Flash, I know I technically shouldn't have even caught you, and I named you after a garbage move I thought you could learn, but I want you to evolve so you can be the best version of you on the team. Don't you want to join the team? I have this soothing bell you can hold on to. Welcome to the team, Mr. Flash. With the team stronger than ever, I surfed my way to an island that had a Pokemon graveyard inside a tall building. And for the first time ever, I could actually grieve with the other trainers. That was a great battle, dude.
Yeah, it was. Here's some money.
So, Kidmup was holding an amulet coin, so you actually owe me 600. We defeated more Team Magma grunts at the top of the tower, and on our way down, I caught what I thought was going to be a super awesome Pokemon, but turned out to be a little disappointing.
Let's go!
My third chance at a fire type, my son, the Vulpix, which I immediately evolved into Ninetales. Why was she a disappointment? I don't know. You'd think a fire type would have no problems defeating a Gloom. But alas. I'm not saying Ninetales is a lame Pokemon. I'm saying mine specifically was. Floof and Kidmup easily cleared the Psychic Gym with Shadow Ball and Surf. And with that, we just have one more gym before we... Is the sun on fire? So I haven't really been paying attention to the story, and now the legendary Pokemon Groudon is angry. And as much as I would have liked to have Groudon on the team, I never found the Master Ball, so we're not risking it. Oh, hey, Wallace. Oh, you're the water-type gym leader? Oh, I hope my fighting grass Pokemon will be okay.
No, you don't have to fight the Celio. I'll get Floof to do that. And with our 8th gym badge, we could finally travel through Victory Road and face the Elite Four.
Aren't you forgetting something?
I don't know how you want me to respond to that. This is it. Our final challenge. Each one of you has trained very hard. And as a reward, you'll each be receiving a piece of candy.
You get a candy. You get a candy. You get a candy. You get a candy. You get a candy. And you get a candy. This is it. This is gamer moment to the max.
Kidmup and Goat were able to finish off Sydney's Pokemon with their water, ice, and fighting moves, and my two dogs, Pikachu and Floof, crunched and bit all of Phoebe's ghost Pokemon. Pikachu might be cursed, though. Against Glacia, my son finally stopped being a disappointment and fire blasted her Glalie. Then I tried to get Goat to drain her Celio, forgetting he didn't like ice.
Okay.
Ice and birds, those are his two big no-nos. Luckily, Kidmup was able to earthquake the rest of her Pokemon. Now it was time for the 4th member of the Elite Four, Drake. His Altaria was defeated by Kidmup and Floof, but they both took some damage. Against his Flygon, I sent out my son.
Okay, what about Fire Blast? You're green. Ah!
Then Flygon dug a hole in the ground, but by the time he came up, Mr. Flash was waiting for him and took him out with a fly. For Drake's next Flygon, I sent out Goat.
I don't think, because he doesn't like birds, and Flygon's a dragon?
Yeah, Flygon wasn't a bird, but I forgot a very important aspect about dragons.
Give him my dynamic punch. Nope, okay.
Oh, no! Oh, he knows flamethrower.
Fire and poison, those are his other two no-nos. Instead, Floop and Pikachu crunched Flygon's head off, and then I used Kidmup's last blizzard on Salamence.
Okay, I'm gonna need this blizzard to hit. Please? Yes! Yes! Yes!
We had done it.
Oh my goodness!
We had cleared 4 champions with some very close calls, but we are all still alive. Now it was time to face the 5th member of the Elite Four. What, you didn't know about the secret 5th boss that's in every Pokemon game? We had one more challenger. Steven. Steven sent out a Skarmory, which was the perfect lightning rod for Pikachu, then Kidmup took out Aggron with Surf, and my son defeated Cradily with Iron Tail. Then Steven sent out a Metagross, and things got messy. I thought Kidmup's Surf would be super effective against this rock with legs. Turns out it wasn't.
Okay, here's what we're gonna do. I have an idea. Kidmup, if you can last another hit, that would be amazing. Oh, Hyper Beam!
Kidmup, my starter Pokemon, had been taken out.
Okay.
At least he got Metagross's health low enough that Floof could easily finish them off.
That's it.
Then Steven sent out his own King Eater, which I knew from personal experience they hated getting crunched.
I know this Pokemon. He hates getting crunched. I don't care about your special defense. You're getting crunched. It's probably because his special defense went up.
Floof eventually took down Claydol, even though Steven used a full restore on it 3 separate times.
Of course. Of course you were.
Stop me!
Which I get, man. I'm part of the Claydol lover community, too. Next was the last Pokemon we needed to defeat. Armaldo. One hit from its ancient power badly injured Floof. So for this final fight, I sent Goat to finish him off. Goat, because he's so awesome, poisoned Armaldo just by standing next to him, and then promptly sky uppercutted him straight in the jaw, just barely knocking him out. Armaldo was clinging onto life when the unthinkable happened. Armaldo knew a bird move.
No! No! No!
Goat had made it so far into our journey, only to faint inches away from the finish line. I could have sent out a level 5 Zigzagoon and still would have won, because Armaldo died to poison on the very next turn.
The poison's gonna finish it off! Right? I didn't even have to... No!
No! Not Goat!
By all accounts, Goat had defeated Armaldo, but he didn't make it! And neither did Kidmup! That was my starter and my favorite Pokemon! No! No, I don't want this trophy! I want Goat and Kidmup!
Colleagues, friends, Wally, we gather together to honor two of the bravest Pokemon I know. One of them from the humble town of Little Root, and the other from a patch of grass in Petalburg Woods. Together, they faced gyms, rivals, and a plethora of wild Pokemon. And when the final challenge came, they didn't back down.
This sucks. I hated that.
And that's how my first Nuzlocke went.
Dude!
Brew Wumples, dude.
Dude.
Nothing, dude.
Dude! Oh, dude! Stop falling in love! No! Tackle's so bad, dude. Body is lava, dude. Don't give him a chance to recover, dude. Dude, stop it. Bash their skull in, dude. That was my psychic ice type, dude.
One time, me and a group of buddies were driving through Texas, and we passed a building that looked like the Whataburger corporate office. Just to be sure, I checked my phone and discovered, yeah, we did just drive past the Whataburger corporate office. But what I found interesting was that the building had hundreds of one-star reviews. After some investigation, I found that these reviews weren't coming from the Whataburger corporate staff. No, these reviews were from once loyal customers who in one way or another had a negative experience at a Whataburger and were going to take this issue to the top. Reading people's wordy laments about their terrible fast food experiences has become a hobby of mine. And it's not just Whataburger. Every fast food corporate office has hundreds of one-star reviews. These people have been wronged by a billion-dollar company, and the only way they can get back at them is calling them stupid. The team at blah 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 have no intelligence whatsoever. I ordered 3 large lemonades, and all 3 spilled in the inside of my car because the cup holder was way too flimsy. I told the manager named Josh, and all he said he could do was say he's sorry. Sorry isn't going to clean up the mess caused by their stupidity! This guy spilled 3 lemonades all over his car, and instead of going, "Ah, I'm so stupid," he went, "Ah, Josh is stupid." This just goes to show that you could do your job perfectly and still have angry customers. Also, what did you expect Josh to do? Hey, I just spilled all that lemonade you gave me in that cup holder. Oh my goodness, how could I be so stupid? I forgot to turn off spill mode. Bring your car out back and I'll get a straw and then I'll suck it dry.
No need to thank me. That's what fast food employees are for.
I can't talk about fast food without bringing up a small local sandwich shop in my area. So here are some of my favorite one-star Subway reviews. We went to the location in blah blah blah. We had 30 minutes to close. I know, sucks, but there was a huge regional wrestling match and there were some starving boys. I walked in and let them know we had 20 sandwiches to order. We didn't have crazy expectations. Substituting meat, forget tomatoes if you're out. We don't need toasted, let's just feed these boys. 9 sandwiches in, the sweetest girl who was making our food said her manager said, "Shut it down," and they're not making the rest of the order. The manager had the employee in tears, and 9 boys didn't get food. I was mind blown. We offered big tips, gave free oil changes to employees working hard to make money. I run a mechanic shop and stay late for customer a lot. We didn't have crazy expectations. We just wanted a whole catering order 30 minutes before close. I know some people are going to be thinking, you're a business that's still open, so you have to do what the customer says. But I want those same people to ask their mother to make them 20 sandwiches at 9:30 p.m. and let me know what she says. And if those 9 boys were still upset, they should have just suplexed the manager into a table and then made the cold cut combo themselves. I placed an order online for 2 footlongs. I walked in to pick up my order, and I was thankful I didn't leave a tip. I received 1 footlong, but ordered 2. It's very clear on the receipt that was attached to the package. I showed it to the woman working behind the counter, and she laughed and said, "Oh, I didn't see that. Let me get that for you." Not sure why she missed that. Has never happened to me before. Is she on something, or does she not know how to read English? I had to stand there and wait for her to make the other footlong. And then this person continues to write a whole 500-word manifesto. Are they on drugs? Can they read English?
Jeez.
Do you think this reviewer is going to tell their grandkids about this story?
And then I had to stand next to the sneeze guard for 2 minutes.
Okay, Grandma, can we go?
And they forgot the mayo!
There are a whole bunch of lengthy reviews just like this. And for these types of reviews, I, like, start thinking about these people psychologically. I feel like these people either have something else going on or nothing else going on. I'm sorry that your lunch was ruined, but if this is the biggest problem in your life, you're doing all right. And maybe this wouldn't have happened if you left a tip. I went to the location at blah, blah, blah. The guy Frank there needs to take some customer service classes. He is not friendly, and when I told him he should be more friendly to his customers, he told me to go ahead and call whoever I wanted to complain. Frank, I love you. You don't need to take customer service classes. You need to be teaching them. IDK, who was working at around 9:45 on May 17th, but somebody needs to give them a hug. I pull up to the window to pay, and there was three girls standing there doing nothing. One of them mumbled my total and stuck out her hand. I gave her my card and she did her thing. Then she handed me a crumpled mess of a bag and two drinks with like zero ice. No have a nice night, no thanks for stopping in, not even a hello. IDK, if all three of those girls lives together and somebody ran over their dog or something, but all three of them looked like they absolutely hated being there and me ordering my meal was the biggest inconvenience they could have experienced. I feel so bad for these workers, they need a hug. But also screw them 1 star. I can't believe this McDonald's took my review down, but that's okay. I will recite it. They had no barbecue sauce for their nuggets the whole Memorial Day weekend. For all you barbecue sauce lovers out there, when you went to this location on any of those days and asked for barbecue sauce and you were told they didn't have any more, you must have felt crushed like I did. Like, what was the point of ordering nuggets and finding out they didn't have barbecue sauce afterwards? Why didn't they disclose that fact before ordering the nuggets and paying for it? I'll tell you why. Because they wanted to take advantage of us, just to get that sale. What, the employees do take the barbecue sauce to their homes to use for their own Memorial Day weekend barbecues? This is one memorable, unfavorable moment that will be remembered for years to come. You know, there are many who are barbecue sauce lovers out there that went through the same feeling I did when I ordered 3 20-piece nuggets just to find out afterwards they didn't have any barbecue sauce. Like, if you agree. I don't want to jump to any conclusions, but do you think they're out of barbecue sauce because the world's number one barbecue sauce lover keeps ordering there? Going through all the trouble to write a review and then recite the review again, all because they were out of barbecue sauce, seems like a lot, but 60 nuggets with no sauce on a national holiday is a tragedy, I'll give you that. I love that this guy didn't even consider that they were just out of sauce and instead went full conspiracy mode, thinking the employees were hoarding the sauce for their own barbecue. You gotta have barbecue sauce for your barbecue. It's in the name. I'm not going to act like every fast food restaurant is in the right all the time, because I've had my fair share of terrible fast food experiences too. I once ordered a burger from Sonic, and they gave me the burger with no meat. And I went, dang, well, that's how my day is gonna go, I guess. I didn't write a lengthy review to hopefully be seen by someone at corporate. I don't know. I got other problems. If reading these reviews has taught you anything, it's that these fast food workers have to deal with all sorts of customers going through all sorts of problems. So please be the customer who shows a little compassion. They are handling your food after all. Leave a like if you agree. My child works for Whataburger, hasn't been paid since December 2nd. Today is 1-4 and still no paychecks. We've been told lies saying paycheck is coming to the store, then FedEx is delivering it, and still nothing. He's only 18, so I feel like they're trying to get over on him. Not to mention the shift manager Liz is having an affair with some of the employees. Yo, what? A burger? Thank you all for watching the video. If you enjoyed it, then I highly recommend reading some of these corporate office fast food reviews yourself. They're a real treat to read. Just some of the passion that these people have needs to be studied. Obviously, not everyone who leaves a 1-star review is an obnoxious Karen, but the ones who go out of their way to review a corporate office are some of my favorites. Thanks again for watching, and wear your seatbelt.
Imagine if Netflix, YouTube, and Hulu never existed. What would you be watching right now? Would you be watching this? I don't think so. You'd be watching this box right here. A
Hellovision?
On this device, instead of picking what you wanted to watch and when you wanted to watch it, the television would decide all that for you. And instead of watching a single 5-second skippable ad in the beginning, you'd have to watch 5 30-second long unskippable ads. Can you think of anything more annoying? An advertisement right in the middle of your show? I don't know if my parents were being cheap or trying to discourage an unhealthy habit of watching too much TV, but growing up, my parents didn't have cable television at all in the house. Now, in this modern day and age of online content, some of you are living perfectly content lives without cable. I know I am. But you have to understand, in the early 2000s, online video wasn't a thing. Yeah, YouTube was created in 2005, but what did that have? This guy at a zoo? That's lame. So being an early 2000s kid, you had to get your cartoons through the TV. And if your parents didn't pay $65 a month to get cable, then you didn't get the channels with SpongeBob, Jimmy Neutron, or Courage the Cowardly Dog. The only thing you got was this green brother and sister called PBS Kids. And whatever these things were. PBS Kids stands for Public Broadcasting Service. Kids. That meant all the shows on PBS Kids were government or privately funded. So the shows on PBS didn't really have any commercials per se, but they did have the same sponsorship ads that would play a message before every show. If you grew up on PBS Kids, then Juicy Juice and Where a Kid Can Be a Kid is just engraved in your memory. And also, every show would thank you, the viewer, for watching, and I think that's really nice. So, everyone watching this, you're welcome. I'm kinda glad my parents didn't buy cable, because instead of spending hours of my time watching mindless television, I spent hours of my time watching television with morals and math. Yep, a lot of shows on PBS were either educational or taught you how to be a good person. The shows I'm going to mention had pretty crazy concepts, but the conflicts in each episode were very down-to-earth and slice-of-lifey, almost like the shows were made for children. Like in Clifford the Big Red Dog. It's a show about this girl's dog who grew up to be the size of a freaking house for no reason except for the fact that the girl loved the dog so much that he grew up to be a monster. So that means if your dog is normal-sized, you don't love it enough. And it probably doesn't love you. So, yeah, giant red dog is a pretty weird premise, but the episodes were about everyday things. Like, this blue dog feels bad that he tore up his owner's sweater, and his friends tell him to just be honest, and he does, and everyone's happy. Or the episode where this new dog moves into town, but he's missing a leg, and then Clifford and his friends have to learn that having three legs still means you can accomplish a lot of things any normal human can do. I mean, dog. And I rate this show a 10 out of 10. Next is Dragon Tales, the show that made dragons kid-friendly. There's Org, he's the biggest, not so brave of heart. There's Cassie, she's so shy, but so very smart. There's Zack and Wheezy and their tales of fun. Cause you know two heads are better than one. Dragon Tales, Dragon Tales, it's almost time for Dragon Tales. The show was pretty similar to Clifford. The characters would spend an episode learning everyday things like how to do a cartwheel, or they would try to make it rain so they could show their friend what a rainbow looks like. And there was also this grandpa dragon who knew Spanish for some reason.
Don't come too close, niños.
And that wasn't the weirdest thing on the show, actually. There was also a dragon character in a wheelchair, which, just like Clifford, is a good character because it teaches kids that disabled people are still people who can accomplish a lot of things. But I think it's a weird combination of two things. A dragon, a mythical beast known for destroying cities, in a wheelchair? If you wanted to stop a dragon from destroying your city, then you just don't install wheelchair ramps anywhere. I should stop talking. I rate the show a 10 out of 10. Now let's talk about Arthur. Here's some fun trivia. Arthur is supposed to be an aardvark. Personally, I don't see it. Basically, it was a show about Arthur and his other furry friends learning lessons, but Arthur tended to tackle more serious subjects than the other two shows. Like, they have episodes where DW hears her parents get in a fight and she worries about them getting a divorce, or the episode where Arthur Falcon punches his little sister, and even having to deal with someone you know getting cancer.
What? Cancer?
The character gets treatment and lives, by the way. Because it's a kid's show. 10 out of 10. Next, let's talk about my favorite show on PBS Kids, Cyber Chase.
Cyber Chase, we're moving, we're beating Hacker at his game. Don't come in,
this show didn't teach kids morals or how to properly treat the disabled. It taught them something far more important. Math. Cyber Chase is set inside a virtual computer world, and this one character named Motherboard was supposed to be the queen slash protector of this world, but she sucks at her job because the villain of the show, Christopher Lloyd, infects her with a virus. So now these three kids have to go on adventures using math principles to thwart the bad guy's plans to save Mommy Board. Motherboard?
Motherboard?
Mommy? Mom, come back. Mommy, now. We need to save Mommy Board.
And unlike all the other shows, this show had an overarching story. The kids would always get this close to saving Motherboard, but nothing they did worked. When I was a kid, I always wondered how much longer it would be until they finally saved her. And they never did. The show's been going on for 16 years, and they're still learning new math principles trying to save Motherboard. I think they're at calculus at this point. The show is teaching you slower than an actual school. What kind of a show makes you wait 16 years for a conclusion? Cyber Chase does, and it's one of the best shows ever created. 10 out of 10. One last show I want to bring up is called Caillou. All you need to know about Caillou is that I hate him. Caillou is a 4-year-old and a demon. He constantly throws a tantrum whenever he doesn't get his way. Even in his theme song, he mentions how much of a brat he is.
Growing up is not so tough, except when I've had enough.
And then he's crying like a child. Well, you're going to have to grow up, Caillou. The world doesn't revolve around you. Now, you might be thinking, James, this kid is 4 years old. Of course he's going to be a brat. And I agree, but a big problem with Caillou isn't the fact that he's a brat, but it's with his spineless parents. Caillou's mom just lets him get away with everything. Whenever I misbehaved, you know what happened to me? I had to go sit in the timeout corner. You know what happens to Caillou? Nothing! Not once does Caillou ever get punished! It's always his mom just being like, Caillou, what you said wasn't very nice. Now go behave, okay? 0 out of 10 with the show with just the humans. I hate it. I just realized that all the shows I mentioned were animated, but there was a lot of non-animated shows that I still watched. But whatever, I could just say that these shows fit the theme of my channel. Or it could make a part 2, I can do whatever I want. Now, as a diehard PBS fanboy, I think I speak for everyone when I say that what PBS was missing was a crossover episode. How hard would it have been for the Clifford people and the Dragon Tales people to coordinate an episode where the three-legged dog finds the dragon scale, he could dig it up out of the sand because dogs like to dig, except this dog wouldn't be that good at digging. And then he would meet up with a wheelchair dragon and they could be best friends. I would have loved that. As much as I'm joking about it, as a kid, I actually really wanted a crossover episode between the shows Clifford and Clifford's Puppy Days, which is another show that follows Clifford before he was interesting, when he was tiny, so before Emily Elizabeth loved him. So there was a bunch of new characters that all knew Clifford when he was little, and the two shows existed in the same universe, so it wouldn't have been that unbelievable for Clifford to visit his childhood home, and then all the other characters who used to call him Small or Squirt would see him now and be like, wow! What the f*** happened to you? You see, it's funny because it's a kid's show and you wouldn't expect them to say that. I waited patiently for that crossover episode, but it never came. But at least I have fan fiction. George, he wagged his tail and smiled. Clifford, it's so good to see you. He nuzzled him as a greeting. Nice to see you too. It's been over 7 years since I last saw you. Yeah, it had, Clifford said happily. George turned his back to the hill. Here I come. There's no quotation marks, by the way. He got ready to tackle him. He punched George off, and they rolled down. Then, when they got to the bottom, George pinned Clifford, who was panting. The three looked at the two of them, who seemed to be having a staring contest, so they decided to go they somewhere else. Both laughed, and Clifford got off of him. He sat down and waited for George to stand up. So, what are we gonna do? The red dog said while quickly getting into a playing position. Okay, that's enough.
I'm terrible at decorating. Not in the sense that I have terrible taste, but rather I'm terrible doing anything. I have this debilitating habit where right before I hang a picture up on a wall, I'll go, yeah, this spot is perfect. I'll just set this on the floor real quick so I remember this is the spot I'm going to hang it up. And then that picture will stay on the floor for 6 months until I finally do hang it up, which takes less than 5 minutes to do so. Sometimes, though, I'll get into a home decoration overhaul kind of mood. Like, recently, I've come into the possession of 30 Warrior Cat books. Somehow. And instead of putting them in a closet next to my 30 Animorph books, I decided it was finally time to buy a bookshelf and put all of my classic literature neatly on display. After perusing multiple furniture websites and getting overwhelmed with the massive amount of choices and styles and letting my algorithm know I was desperate for a new shelving unit, I had a sudden moment of clarity. I am spending more time thinking about shelves than I've ever wanted to in my entire life. I just need something to hold my cat books. Why am I overcomplicating this? I should check old reliable IKEA. Ooh, this looks nice. The Calyx. Now, I could just pay to have this thing delivered straight to my door, or I could go on a fun adventure filled with meatballs. The older you get, the more fun going to IKEA gets. Any piece of furniture you can possibly imagine is at IKEA, with a ridiculous name. In my head, this was going to be the quickest IKEA trip of my life. I would eat some meatballs that are so delicious you don't even need spaghetti to go with them. Then I would find my Calyx and take it home. If I had two birds right now, I could totally kill them with one stone. Or meatball. But if you know anything about IKEA, a quick IKEA trip is an oxymoron. The first red flag that this trip was going awry was that as I was standing in the checkout line with my food on my lunch tray, I couldn't help but notice that even though I asked for the 12 meatball meal, I only counted 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 meatballs on my plate. Now I had to ask myself an important question. Am I the type of guy who will step out of line, walk back to the server, and say, I don't know how you Swedes count, but here in the States... And before I even finished the hypothetical, I figured, no, I'm not that type of guy. But then, like, more minor inconveniences kept happening. After I completed my incomplete meal, I went to fill up my water bottle at one of those water filling stations. But when I put my bottle in, the flow of water, like, curved to the side, but then when I moved my bottle over to where the water was going, it wouldn't be under the sensor, so I had to do this whole dance where I kept activating and moving my water bottle, and by the time my bottle was half full, I remember thinking, I wish this machine just didn't work. Because then I would just go, oh, guess it doesn't work. But now it's making me work for my hydration. But whatever. This is all just part of the IKEA experience and why it's such a magical place. Right? I skipped grabbing a shopping cart and started blazing through all the neatly designed showrooms that I'm usually a huge sucker for.
Wow. I wish my bedroom looked like a Scandinavian child's bedroom.
I'm not doing any of that today. I had one item on my mind, and that was the one and only easy to pronounce Calyx. Now imagine my surprise when I turned a corner and saw an entire showroom called the Calyx Collection. Maybe if I had been more observant and saw the giant Calyx display at the front of the store, or just looked on the website for two more seconds, I would have learned that Calyx is like the name of a type of bookshelf. And they come in all these different shapes and sizes, and oh no, I'm overwhelmed with choices again. I saw they were also selling these cubbies that could go into the shelves, and I thought, now I gotta get a cart. If you don't know, IKEA is a one-way street. Arrows illuminate the floor, indicating the flow of traffic. And even though I was robbed of a meatball, I was still willing to respect the rules of the road, and I did a full lap around the store. And I'm super glad I put in the work to fill up my water bottle, because this mega store was a lot more mega than I remember. I kept following the arrows, but I swear they were making me go in circles. I am not surprised that there is a never-ending IKEA SCP, because as you walk through a regular IKEA, you definitely get worried that this place will never end. But the real problem going through all the showrooms twice was that it doubled my chances to see a piece of furniture and go, oh, I actually could use that. There has got to be a Swedish word for going to IKEA for one item and then leaving with $1,000 worth of furniture. There was an end table that I swear had a spotlight shining directly on it. I could hear Swedish angels singing. This end table would be perfect for my printer, which is currently on the floor. So after two laps of the showroom, I headed to the giant warehouse to pick up my stuff, and there were these shelf dividers I wanted, which were ironically at the very back of this long shelf themselves. And by this point in my journey, I was kind of done playing by IKEA's rules, so I just climbed up in there and got them myself. What was I supposed to do? Ask someone for help and make them crawl up in there? No. Now, that amazing end table that I wanted for my printer had to be picked up in the order pickup area for some reason. I guess they had it in the super secret employee only warehouse. So I showed the guy my receipt, and my name appeared on a screen along with an estimated time my order would be ready, which was in 10 minutes. So I waited 10 minutes, and the guy never called my name. And I thought, I'm not bothered by this. It was an estimate. It's fine being a few minutes late. Then more time passed. And by this point, it had been 10 minutes after my estimated 10-minute wait time. So I go up to the guy and said, listen, I can let the meatball slide. But did you forget about me? And he was like,
oh, yeah, we're just waiting on someone who can operate a forklift.
Do you want me to climb up there? I added 45 minutes to my quickest IKEA trip to get something I came into the store not originally wanting. I didn't even measure if my printer would fit, so I was kind of taking a gamble there. But good news, it totally fits. So, however, even with all those minor inconveniences I had to deal with, something happened in that IKEA that really stuck out to me and, dare I say, made the whole trip worth it. After I had done my first lap of the showroom and secured a shopping cart, I saw this middle-aged woman with who I'm assuming was her mom in a wheelchair, and she was grabbing all these small items in her bare hands. And even though I had traveled very far for the shopping cart, I asked her, do you need a shopping cart?
Oh, yes, that would be very helpful. Thank you.
I'm doing a voice. That's not how she sounded. After I gave her mine, I did just turn around and went against the flow of traffic to grab another shopping cart. I'm only running on 11 meatballs here. I'm not doing that a third time. But then later when I was down in the warehouse, I was about to put this big box into my cart when that same woman just so happened to be there and asked, do you need any help? And it made me realize that a simple act of kindness can be so meaningful to someone that it can completely change the type of day they're having. Admittedly, I did end up putting that box back because I realized it was in the wrong color. I'm sorry for making you crawl up in there, Grandma. Sometimes we get so wrapped up in decorating our room or scrolling on our phone that we forget the real world is out there. So go out and do something nice for someone today. It'll make both of you feel a lot better. And if you have any pictures just leaning up against a wall, go hang them up right now. It'll take like 2 seconds. I have never played Fortnite, but we're going to be playing a lot of it today, so buckle up. If I am going to get cracked, then I should probably download the game. Wait, what's an epic launcher? I just want to play Fortnite. Luckily, this endeavor won't break the bank because Fortnite is a free game. Really? I get to experience all of this for free? Today, we're going to be playing 100 games of Fortnite to see if we can actually improve, develop a skill, and try and earn that elusive victory royale. I mean, we're not playing Fortnite. I'm playing Fortnite. You're watching a YouTube video. Now, before we get into any games, let's first... Alright, I'm just going to go with my standard username, no big deal, and... Oh. Okay, yeah, that one's probably on me. The game's been out for 7 years, so I hope whoever has that account has been earning me a lot of dubs and make me look good. Okay, I guess we should keep a low profile. We don't want to get stream sniped, you know? So after hours of brainstorming, I settled on the name GatorGuy333, because I'm the Gator Guy. 333. There are two popular modes to play Fortnite. There's the classic Battle Royale mode with all the features and doodads that made the game as popular as it is, like doing this. And then there's Zero Build, where there's none of that shit. Now, which mode is the more competitive mode? Whichever mode I'm playing. For my very first game, I decided to play the classic Battle Royale mode, baby. We're playing Fortnite like how God intended. Builds on, ranked off, skin default. What, you think I'm gonna buy a skin? You think I'm gonna spend money on a free game? Get out of here. Oh my God, is that Peter Griffin? All right, enough talk. Let's start. I would like to remind you that I'm playing Fortnite for the very first time.
Who's shooting me? Oh God.
I didn't have a friend on call to tell me what buttons to press or give me emotional support. Like, no one told me, hey, don't drop that mythic gun for shield blasters. Shield blasters aren't even that good. Also, my go-to video games are Mario Maker and Tetris. I'm not really a first-person kind of shooter. What do you mean it's technically a third-person shooter? Who are the other two people? Instead of doing all of these unnecessary side quests, right now, my one and only quest is to be the best and not rest until I conquest all the sweats.
Do I take fall damage in this game?
Don't worry, Past James. You'll find out soon enough. I landed in fencing fields, and the second my feet touched the ground, I started getting shot at. I went inside a building and started breaking random objects, hoping that there was a gun inside them.
This is horrible sound.
And I grabbed a rare Striker AR. The very first gun in my Fortnite career and it's already a rare? Let's go, dude. But then I found an uncommon shotgun just lying on the floor, and I had to pick which gun I was going to take to battle because my inventory was already full of priceless items. I decided to keep my rare gun because it had more bullets and because I like the color blue more than green. So,
can I only hold one gun, or is it like my inventory is full? Who am I talking to? Oh! Ah! You stood no chance, bro. You stood no chance.
In that moment, I had gotten what I thought was my very first Fortnite kill. This, however, was not another player, but rather one of the many NPCs just wandering around the map. But I didn't know that at the time, so there was nothing but pure joy on my face. Almost immediately, I got a second Fortnite kill, and my suspicions that these were actually computer players were growing.
Is this a bot? Why can't I? They like didn't hurt me at all.
I started shooting what looked like a final boss, but had run out of bullets. Uh-oh. I ran away, narrowly dodging every shot being fired at me. I healed up, found another gun, tried shooting the boss again, ran out of bullets again, and then I ran away again. Hey, that's two confrontations where I didn't die. Clearly, I'm a natural. I knew I had to get away from the danger, so I started building a ramp.
And like, we're building a staircase. Ah, oh God! No! No, that's how it happened. That's how I went out.
So yes, there is fall damage in Fortnite. You know what? Build mode sucks. Build mode's what killed me. We're done doing that. We're doing no build from now on. Now, before we get into game two, I would like to briefly explain some of the fundamentals I learned from playing that I wish someone explained to me. Starting with the...